Yeah, I seen all the big sexy names are gone, so I thought I'd go with a little small school guy that's getting zero hype.
Rookie Fever, the show that looks closely at NFL rookie values all year long.
Let's go! Let's get the show going, man.
Hurry up, hurry up!
With your hosts, Swagzilla Zero G.
We can't all be winners.
Mike, the feverish Fanero.
It's never in a vacuum! Nothing is in a vacuum!
And FF underscore spaceman.
And he's trying to trick me by supporting vacated targets as if they're a real thing.
David Wright. The Rookie Fever Podcast.
We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it,
baby. Let's go.
Welcome to the Rookie Fever Podcast. I am Mike, the feverish Fanero, and by now you know what we're doing. 2021 rookie player profiles. We have 10 of these out already, with three hitting our feed every single week. And of course, we have our Three Musketeer episode, as always, hitting your ears every week as well, with Swagzilla Zero G and Dave the Spaceman Wright. But they aren't with me today. But do you know who is? The blended BK Whopper eaten Canadian with the best damn video countdown animation in video streaming, my friend from the Dynasty Viper Vipercast, Matt Donnelly. How the hell are you?
Oh, Fanero, you know I'm doing good. I can't complain. And if I did, no one pay attention to me anyway. So we're going to get rolling here, man. I'm excited to be on the show here. Been busy, so it's kind of nice to be that guy sitting in the back seat tonight and kind of answering the questions rather than trying to drive the ship here. So it's going to be kind of nice and relaxing. I'm looking forward to this, and I'm never going to have a blended Big Mac ever again.
Good to hear. That looked disgusting. Okay, Matt, let's get right into it. You ready?
Absolutely.
Rookie Fevers. Rookie Player Profile Edition.
All right, our first question out of the gate is, you got to pick a rookie of your choice. Now, there were quite a few off the list. As we mentioned, there's 10 profiles up on our feed already, so 10 were off the list. Tell our listeners who you picked and why.
I went a little off the board here this year because we are now entering draft season. We've been in here probably for a couple months now, realistically, and we've heard the big names. We've heard the Jamar Chases, the Devonta Smiths, the Jalen Waddles. We've talked about Najee Harris almost to the point where it's going in one ear and out the other. We know who we're drafting in the first couple rounds of every rookie draft. The order's not quite set, but we know who those first 20 players are going to be, 2024. Throw in some super flex, add some quarterbacks. We've been listening about Trevor Lawrence for 4 years now. Let's be honest. I wanted to dig a little deeper. I wanted to help your listeners find that diamond in the rough. I wanted them to find the 2021 version of James Robinson. Anyone who's paying attention and listening knows I was on James Robinson last year, right off the get-go. I love the small school guys, so I'm always going to be attracted to that small school player that nobody's talking about, the guy who's got that chip on their shoulder. And this year, I am going with Coastal Carolina's via Presbyterian School, Torrance, CJ Marable.
Nice. I love it. You didn't want to go with low-hanging fruit top guys. You wanted to make sure you gave our listeners somebody they can pluck in late rounds. This is a three-part question. Where do you see Marable being drafted in rookie drafts? Where are you drafting him? And then can you predict when the NFL will draft him? Three-part question. Where is he going to rookie drafts? Where are you taking him in rookie drafts? And where will the NFL draft him?
Okay, well, I'm going to start with where I'm going to draft him. I'm comfortable taking him right now in the fourth round. That's going to be a lot higher than you're going to see everywhere else. Everywhere else, you're probably going to see him as a fifth rounder or not drafted at all. And he's a guy you're going to want to jump on early in the process, much like we said James Robinson last year. I can't think of very many people that took James Robinson before the fourth round in their rookie drafts. I got him as a priority free agent, where as soon as free agency opened, I spent what I could. He wasn't a big household name. I listened to the hype throughout training camp, like Zigbo and Raquel Armstead and obviously Fournette's movement all made things possible for James Robinson. But the talent was always there. He produced at Illinois State. And the NFL, much like James Robinson here, again, another comparison, he is probably going to be a sixth or seventh round draft pick because there is a devaluation of the running back position, or he's going to be a priority free agent for teams looking for that three down potential back. That back who can catch the ball out of the backfield, but also give you some yards through the tackles.
Great. And that was actually something I was going to follow up with you. The one thing that I think is a little different than a James Robinson, I know you're not comparing the two players. You're comparing the rookie draft stock or NFL draft stock. You're not really comparing the two players. But the thing that really stood out to me that is very different than James Robinson is just what a receiving weapon Maribel is. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so if we're looking at his numbers here, and we're talking this Coastal Carolina, so three seasons, 2018, 19, and 20, he had 84 receptions for 703 yards. That's about 8.4 yards per reception. And then obviously chipped in 12 touchdowns over that period of time. This year alone, he didn't quite have those receiving numbers. He still had 31 receptions, but they also wanted to keep him fresher this year. They had a good 1-2 combination down there in Coastal Carolina. They had a freshman quarterback that stepped in McCall, who we're going to hear his name in a couple of years when draft days come, because this kid's got some talent as well. He was still the lead back in Coastal Carolina, but they tried to keep him fresh. And we've seen with Coastal Carolina, 8-0 in conference, 11-1 on the season. They had good reason to do that. They had a great team this year, and they were making a push for some national attention.
Yeah, I know they got that national attention in that BYU game. That was a big one for them and Maribel. So I think you said 84 receptions in the last 3 years. Does that sound right?
That is correct, yep.
I got 69 for our listeners in the last two. So big chunk in that last two, representing a 93rd percentile college target share. Impressive as well. It seemed like Coastal was riding his back for sure. We got a 5'10", 200-pound 24-year-old senior from Coastal Carolina. What's his fit in the NFL? Where does he fit in?
I think he's going to have to bide his time a little bit. Again, I'm really comparing his situation much like James Robinson. Mm-hmm. I think he's got the talent to be a James Robinson type, where he could get in and carry the load. We've seen him almost 500 carries in those three seasons of Coastal Carolina, and that's 118 carries in 2018, the 204 in 2019, and 169 last year, where he was kind of splitting some time a little bit so they could keep some tread off his tires. So 500 carries in college is still a lot of work. I could see him getting similar usage at the next level, but he's probably going to have to bide his time because the draft capital won't be invested in him. Where do I see him fit? I think right off the get-go, you can see him, for your listeners, here's an older name, Jacquez Rogers, coming in the third down, back right off the get-go, coming in, his pass protection is not great. We'll talk about some weaknesses a little bit later, but it's not right where you'd want it to be. I believe if I'm looking at numbers here, when I was doing my profile on him, PFF had him graded at about a 42.3 while surrendering six quarterback hurries in 2020. So he's going to have to work on that a little bit. But if you're looking for a pure pass catcher, you just mentioned 69 receptions over the last 2 years. That is someone who can get it done on third down. That's a guy you can pluck in there. And he's got that mismatch. He's going to run probably legitimately a 4.4 if we're talking with the gear on. I think he plays faster than what he's going to run. He's a 4.4 guy. You put a 4.4 running back, you bounce him outside, you create that mismatch on third down with a linebacker. There's not many linebackers that are going to be able to cover a running back that's as shifty and elusive as he is with that short area agility that he possesses, as well as that 4.4 speed.
I think the speed is key. We're going to get into that a little later. Let's go into some of those negatives real quick, since you kind of hinted at those. I mean, I have some concerns. I have a little concern about his size, pass pro, but that's a concern about almost everyone coming out of college. And then, of course, just the small school competition. So what are your concerns about Maribel here?
Small school competition is always going to get brought up by the scouts. It's always going to get brought up by you and I and stuff like that. And it's a legitimate thing. It really is. We look at some of these numbers, and there's some games against some small schools that he didn't quite have the production that you would hope for. Unlike James Robinson, who dominated at every level, if you're in a small school, you better dominate the competition.
I agree.
What I'm looking at here, so I'm looking at some small schools, but I'm also going to throw BYU. I don't really call BYU a big school, but they're not a small school by any stretch. The last three non-bowl games, so I'm not counting the Liberty game here, in the Cure Bowl. The last three games, he had 16 carries for 157 against Texas State, 23 carries for 132 against BYU, 20 carries for 120 against Troy. That last 3 to 4 games of his senior season.
Dominant.
It was dominant. Now, some of the games prior to that, not so much. Profile for me screams a guy I want to throw a dart at. He's a guy I want to take a chance on because I believe he's got some tools in there that the NFL is really going to appreciate. Now, yes, PFF says his blocking is a little bit down. You're going to get that from probably 90% of all backs coming from college to the pro game. The speed's a little bit different. Adjusting to that's going to be a little bit different. You're going to see a lot of whiffs and misses on angles and stuff like that. There's very few running backs that can come in, step in right away, and like dominate in the pass pro game. Now, passing game on third down, that's where Marble's going to make his biggest due for the team that decides to take a chance on him. I'm very excited about what we see late in the season. I'm excited to see what he's done in his career. Yes, like I said, those games are not all great, but if you look at the overall picture of what he was able to do in those 3 years at Coastal Carolina, we're looking at nearly 2,700 rushing yards over that period of time. So he's nearly 1,000-yard rusher per season.
Wow.
And then you throw in the receiving game, his all-purpose yards. He hit like 1,000 yards every season. He put up something like, don't quote me on this, I want to say just under 3,400 all-purpose yards between receiving and rushing throughout that career.
Great. This is good stuff. So we hit on his speed. We hit on the fact that he could be a great third down back in that receiving role. If you had to pick one trait that will make him successful in the NFL, what is that one trait?
What makes him so enticing is that blending of that short area agility and with that speed. When you combine the two, it's good to have speed. Speed's great. There's a need for speed. If you want to blaze it, that's great. But you, as a running back, if you have that short area burst, that short area agility, where you can see a hole, kind of shift your way through it, I think that's where that speed really pays off. So you've seen a lot of running backs that have speed that have gone nowhere. And you've seen some running backs that consistently can pick up 4 yards per carry, not because they're going to bust out a big run, but because you're going to see them get 4 yards here, 4 yards there, 4 yards there. They're consistently finding that gap and falling forward. I think that's a key, always being able to fall forward. Now, one of the knocks on Marable is, yes, he always falls forward, but that first contact often brings him down as well. So he's going to have to work on that contact balance a little bit. Actually, a lot of it. I don't even know if a lot of it's a word, but he's going to have to work on that as well. But that short area ability, you can watch him go between the tackles. So he can run between the tackles. He can bounce it to the outside, and he can factor into the passing game. Those are like the three things you want to see from a running back. The holy trinity of running back status right there.
But is he a patient runner? Does he wait for those blocks? Or
you see that? I would say you see that patience show up from time to time. A lot of the time, if he sees a hole, he's hitting a hole. So the patience doesn't really factor in there.
Right.
But like I said, he has that short area elusiveness. And when he's coming up to the line, he siphons his way kind of through that hole. And he does it with speed. So it's one cut, finds the next defender, makes another quick cut. So he can make 2 or 3 cuts within that 5-yard box before he busts one out. And if he can get to that second level with that speed, that's a dangerous guy. He's not, I wouldn't say he's got Le'Veon Bell type patience. We've all watched Le'Veon Bell come up to the line, stand up, take a look, and then find the hole. He's not quite there, but patience does show up on his film.
What is his ceiling and what is his floor?
Well, obviously his floor is the same as, let's compare him to another Coastal Carolina running back, the one that we were all super hyped on years ago, D'Angelo Henderson. There's a blast from the past, maybe a name we want to choose to forget. D'Angelo Henderson is probably the most recognized running back in Coastal Carolina history. Nearly 4,700 rushing yards, 29 touchdowns, 41 total touchdowns if you include the passing game. Like, he was a big deal back in the day. And where is he now?
Right.
So I really think CJ Marable has that floor as well, because I don't think the draft capital is going to be invested in him.
Right.
And running backs, as we know, are a dime a dozen. So when we're talking about the running back position, we have to be careful about that. But the one interesting stat I thought with Marable was he finished his career 32 straight games with at least one reception. That's going to tell me that maybe while his floor is super low and his ceiling's not incredibly high, he could find a nice niche out there where he's going to factor in the passing game and have be able to contribute for 5 or 6 years because of that ability to catch the ball. As far as the ceiling, I think he, if given the opportunity, I believe he could. I'm going to keep comparing him to a James Robinson type season. I think that's the ceiling. But we're talking about an incredibly low floor. and a decent ceiling. We're not talking Saquon Barkley here or McCaffrey. And even James Robinson, people are still questioning that. He had a huge season last year, but people are ready for him to come right back down because the draft capital was not invested in him. There are teams that people still are mocking running backs to Jacksonville, for crying out loud. There's no need for a running back in Jacksonville. You have James Robinson. Why are you even talking about bringing a running back in? But they will, because the draft capital invested in James Robinson is not there.
Right.
So even though James Robinson put up some good numbers last year, and we love James Robinson, he can be replaced in a blink of an eye. I think that's kind of where Marable kind of falls in that place too. Even if he has success, he's always going to have to play with that chip on his shoulder and look over his shoulder, because there won't be that draft capital invested in. No one's going to waste a first or second or third round draft pick on him. Even in fantasy circles, we're talking about potentially undrafted for our fantasy drafts when we're talking about this guy. So low floor, because we've seen running backs come and go, and he's got a decent ceiling, but the opportunity needs to be there, much like everyone else. Like, James Robinson doesn't get that opportunity without Fournette moving on. And we all know Fournette was a top 12 running back as far as fantasy goes because of the load he was able to get.
I think your analysis on CJ is like, just it's consistent. Yeah. So I love where you're going with this. I love that you're staying consistent. My question to you now is, what is your favorite NFL team landing spot for any rookie running back this year? Your favorite landing spot.
What's the biggest thing we're talking about in this offseason right now? The salary cap.
Yep.
We're watching Monday. Watch for Monday to kick in and watch the names that get cut. Yep. There is going to be a serious amount of good players getting cut because teams are trying to get under the cap. Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm drafting a running back in second or third, I'm probably paying them $2 to $3 million per season. Do I want to invest $2 or $3 million for one of these good running backs, or draft running back in the 6 or 7, pay him a lot less money and then have him on my roster? Right. So I think some of these teams that we're not talking about right now, Kansas City, you've already got Clyde Edwards-Helaire in there. Maybe they go off to get him. Or let's talk about a team like New Orleans. You've got Kamara in there. You want to do something very similar. You're already pressed $69 million in the hole. Like, you're already in cap purgatory, so to speak. Maybe this is a good spot for CJ Marable as well, because you're going to pay him the bare minimum, what's that, $250,000, to back up Alvin Kamara. Maybe Latavius Murray gets moved on and cut because the numbers just don't work that way. And now you've got yourself an inexpensive backup running back who can factor in the passing game. So I think that's a great fit as well. So I think you got to look at, for these running backs like Marable and these other ones that are going to go undrafted, teams that are in cap trouble. And we're going to see who feels that they're in the most trouble here the next couple of days. But I think those are some better potential landing spots for a player like him.
Yeah, I literally have heard the word massacre associated with the cuts that we're going to see coming up. I think one team that's not doing great with the cap that is probably going to lose their running back to free agency, who may be, I guess, filled in by A.J. Dillon, who isn't known as a pass catcher. What do you think about that combo? I know they have Williams there as well, so that might be a moot point, but just curious.
Well, I definitely see them moving on from Jamal Williams, who, by the way, is one of my favorite running backs just because of his personality, and talking about snowmen and mermaids and the stuff that he gets on with behind the scenes is fantastic. I really do believe that Green Bay's best interest would be franchising Aaron Jones. I think it's like a $10 million hit to franchise him. A.J. Dillon, not much of a pass catcher. He started catching a little bit at the very end of his Boston College career. We didn't really see a whole lot last year, but yeah, that's a fantastic opportunity for him there too. You get a decent O-line, so your pass protection has got to be good, but not great. Mm-hmm. You've got the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. And if Aaron Jones is moved on and Jamal Williams is not re-signed, you definitely have a glaring hole for a pass catching running back. And that's exactly what CJ Marable can fill.
What needs to change to move him up NFL draft boards or rookie drafts? How important is his 40 time?
I'm going to reference Daniel Jeremiah here. He was talking about it on Twitter there not too long ago about the 40 and stuff like that, and how the 40 is basically going to become obsolete. We're at a day and age in technology, and you do movie magic, so you understand how we can manipulate everything. These players are being timed while they're running already. We've seen guys hit 23 miles per hour. Well, guess what? Game speed is a lot more impressive than me running around in my underwear. Let's be honest here. Now, nobody wants to see that, And we know factor. What I put on the gear on Sunday to play for the Green Bay Packers, you know exactly how fast I am. Not what I'm wearing when I'm running my 40 in my underwear in Indianapolis. So the combine, outside of medicals and medical rechecks, is all for the fans.
Right.
I don't think there's a whole lot that gets going on there. In fact, I think the combine may balloon some players. We've seen guys who've been absolutely combine killers, so to speak, where they've dominated the combine and seen their draft stock go up. But that's just people getting excited about something. I think he's going to get clocked at around 4.28, 4.3. I think he's probably more realistically a 4.4 runner based on what I've seen. The one thing that kind of disappointed me is, I know it's not a big deal, but he didn't receive Senior Bowl invite. He didn't. Mm-hmm. He did get the East-West invites. He got those other smaller bowl all-star game invites, but he didn't get the Reese Senior Bowl invite, and he didn't get the NFL Combine invite. And for me, that Combine invite's very important, because players who get invited to that Combine are players that scouts want to see or want more information on, or guys they want to invest into in the future. So these are guys, if I'm a scout and I'm putting my job on the line, I want to make sure the guys I'm looking at drafting, I'm getting a better look at, whether it's at their pro days or however this virtual combine is going to look like. Now, as a scout, if I've watched CJ Marable, I'm not sure I want to put my name to him and bang the table for him. But as a priority free agent, where there's no threat of my job security coming to play, I'll pound the table for CJ Marable to get him on my roster as a priority free agent.
I like that. I like that a lot. You know what people don't like is player comps. So I'm not going to ask for one. Instead, I'm going to give you a player comparison reaction. JD McKissic, James White, similar sizes, known for the pass catching ability, but also can run between the tackles, both guys.
Yeah, I would probably, if I was to choose one of them, I'd probably lean more towards James White.
Okay.
Just because I think he's got the ability to have that longevity, yeah, and factor, be more of a factor into a team's offense than McKissic. Now, McKissic's done a little bit more now with Washington, but it took him longer to get there. Mm-hmm. Like I said, one of those comparisons that we talked about, I'm doing air quotes for people who can't see me right now. What was Jacques Rodgers because of what he was able to do? And he did have some good blended speed.
Yep.
Could hit the tackles from time to time. He did come in. It was a serviceable RB1 for the Falcons from time to time. But I think Marable could carry the load more often than what Rodgers did. And obviously, he could factor in the passing game. So if we're going to go Rodgers, White, McKissic, I think I'd lean towards Jacques here. But I think James White of the two is probably my better comparison.
I wonder what the narrative out there would be with James White leaving New England if Maribel was selected by the New England Patriots.
Man, that's the last place I think any running back needs to go. I think
I love that. I love that you said that. But you see the narrative though, right? Like people love to, one person leaves, another person comes in known for a similar thing. They just lock and step, say, oh, wait, that's going to be the next James White on New England.
Well, yeah, I want the first CJ Marable. That's what
there I want. Go. I love it. So that's a great way to end the discussion on CJ Marable. I have two final questions for you. I want to know, who is your guy in this year's draft, a guy that you are hanging your hat on, could be anywhere in any round, just a guy that you're like, you know what, this is a dude I'm going to own.
Dudes I'm going to own. Obviously, CJ Marable is going to be one of the guys. I don't know if I'm going to own him as much now that I'm coming on the show and talking about him. You've got to, people need to understand, when I do this, I probably put more effort into scouting the small school guys. So the other one that I'm banging the table for, that I'm going to own, that if you need to come, me to come back on the show and do another one, because I don't think anyone else is going to pick his profile, is Jonathan Adams Jr. out of Arkansas State. Why Arkansas State? Because I love Kirk Merritt. I was watching Merritt last year when I was focusing on Arkansas State. Jonathan Adams Jr. popped up. The dude is a beast. Take a look at those metrics that he's putting up right now. If you want to see your sweatpants move, put his film on. It's fantastic.
Oh my God. I'm going to watch that immediately after this show. One more. One guy you will not touch and everyone will overdraft.
Oh boy, guys that are
One guy you won't touch. He's just going to get drafted too high. The hype is already here. You won't draft him because you won't be able to.
Well, I think it's, if we're looking at the quarterback position, it's probably Zach Wilson. That hype train is building and building. And as we get closer to the draft, more and more scouts are talking about him. We're hearing his name more and more. That talk is getting crazy for me. I've already gone on the record. And I was talking with Mark Schofield about this here on the ViperCast. And I said, you know what? For pound, I use that term very loosely because he looks fantastic without a shirt on. Mac Jones is my QB2. Like, we're talking about QB2 right now. I think he's got the safest floor.
Wow.
And if I was putting my name on someone there, it'd be Mac Jones, just because I think he's got that safe floor. I've seen everything I need to see from him. He's going to be the quarterback five probably drafted of this group. So he's got the lower, you know, I'd rather take a quarterback later that I feel has potential as a better, a safer floor. I think Zach Wilson's going to be overdrafted. I think I've heard teams, some teams out there, whether it's true or not, have him as the number one quarterback, even ahead of Trevor Lawrence. Chris Sims threw that out there recently on Twitter, that he's got Zach Wilson as the top quarterback in this draft.
Wow.
That's pretty high praise. That's a lot of hype around a guy. I know Jeff Mueller there, we talked about it here. He's kind of our PT guy on the ViperCast. He has no concerns about his shoulder injury. For me, that rotator cuff surgery on the throwing arm is going to be a concern for me because of how hard he throws and the kind of torque and the way Zach Wilson throws the ball. He changes that angle all the time. He's good at changing the angle on how he throws, but when you change that angle and you throw so hard as a baseball player and stuff like that, you know it's going to put that extra unnecessary strain on that shoulder. What kind of career is he going to have? I feel that he's going to have you got a good solid 8 years out of him possibly, but you're not going to get a Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger type career from him. And depending on how much what you feel about the quarterback position, that's kind of where I'm at there. On the flip side, tight end's always volatile. If you're talking fantasy football, I think Kyle Pitts in a league of his own. I'm going to try and get him. I don't care what the cost is. I'm willing to jump up. If he was a wide receiver, he'd probably be wide receiver two in this draft. Mm. So I definitely don't think he's going to get over. He's going to get drafted high, but I think it's justified. Pat Freiermuth, Penn State tight end.
Yep.
I think he's a little too high for what I'm liking. I think he's a good tight end, but I don't think I'm going to take a chance on him, especially in fantasy, because we've seen tight ends not pan out more often than not, or they take a little bit more time to get to where they're. You're looking at a 3 year period in which you want to go there. So why would I invest a second or third round rookie draft pick on a player I'm going to have to wait 2 or 3 years for them to develop?
We got a lot of bonus action in there, including some late QB talk. I absolutely love it. Matt, thank you so much for joining me this week. Please tell everyone where they can find you, your content, and anything else you have coming up that you might want to promote.
Oh, man, I'm excited. We've got some great shows coming up on the ViperCast. This week alone, we got one of my good friends there, Mr. Consistency himself, Bob Lung, joining us on Tuesday. And then we are going to invite Sigmund Bloom onto our couch on Friday the 12th. So you're going to want to check that out. And then the following week, we call it the St. Paddy's Week. We got Pat Fitzmaurice there coming on, now a football guys recently, one of the most accurate rankers around. And followed up by our Friday with Mike the Hitman Wright going to join us. So the guests are keep on rolling here with the ViperCast. You're going to want to hit the YouTube link there. I'm not even sure what the link is. Just go Dynasty Vipers on YouTube, find our channel, hit that subscribe. We've got some big shows coming on. Last week, we had Bogman from Bogman and Welsh come on. Mark Schofield was on Tuesday. Peter Schrager joined us on the Wednesday. And Calvin, of course, has his team spotlight series. You can catch that on the YouTube. Our family continues to grow at the Vipers. We continue to put out some content every other day there, try to get some new content for our viewers. Very driven by the YouTube sensation here and the video stuff. But I got to say one thing. We're kind of that fake it till you make it kind of phase. We have a good product. It looks good. We're not where we want to be, but because of people like yourself, Finero, there with the intro video, which is absolutely killer. Bob Gilchrist there with the graphics. Like, we've got that professional look going on.
Thanks again for joining us. You just took Rookie Fever up a notch with that profile nobody is going to see coming. And thank you, our listeners. We really appreciate you. I cannot say that enough. This is the Rookie Fever Podcast. Please do not forget to rate and review. And please, please do not forget to be awesome. What did that blended Burger King Whopper taste like, by the way?
Dude, if we're still recording, you want to get this in there. There's little sesame seeds. They're getting in my teeth. My mustache has that odor from the Big Mac smoothie stuck in it. So I'm smelling everything now. Like, I'm smelling it. I'm tasting it. All my senses are going. I'm dry heaving. My eyes are watering.
I'm not going to lie, dude. It was hard to watch.